Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 721, and we're recording this on, don't look at my watch, Thursday, March 21st, 2024. My name is Martin Spriggs, show about technology and ministry. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you. I believe you aren't in your normal office today.
No, I'm in my Eastern office, at least for the day, and that's in Elkhart, Indiana. I'm in a waiting room getting my camper repaired.
So, okay.
The heater had a problem, so I came straight to the manufacturer. So Elkhart, Indiana is about a three-hour drive, so hopefully it was worth the drive. So they're in the midst of ripping out my water heater and putting a new one in. So that's what I'm doing.
Good for you. This show stops for no camper. So
it sure doesn't.
Rolling right along.
The show must go on.
And we have special guests today. Always happy to welcome to the Wells Tech discussion our education technology gurus. We have Rachel Feld, Professor Rachel Feld, coming to us from Martin Luther College. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Sally.
And we have Jason Schmidt, who's at the Oshkosh Area School District. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Sally. It's tough to keep up with me sometimes. So,
truth told, but still sunshine coming from Jason's corner always.
Yep, absolutely.
Happy to have
it's
you
always
guys
here.
Yeah, and we're continuing our book discussion. We've been spending time with Jason and Rachel talking about a book called AI in the Classroom, or the AI Classroom, I believe is the correct title. Rachel turned us on to this book because she and a group of MLC profs reviewed it last summer. And I think that was very wise of them. As we know, this whole school year has been dominated by discussion of AI. So what are we talking about today, guys? Anybody?
Well, we started the chapters that we're talking about today really had to do with incorporating like some of the applications of AI and how it really can help with some of your instructional design efficiencies that you can gain with it. So in particular, the first chapter talked about universal design for learning and that whole concept of UDL. As it applies to planning your classroom instruction. So, you know, we've known for a really long time. This is going to sound like the most obvious statement ever. So maybe I get a new nickname and it can be Captain Obvious, and that's okay. but kids are different, right? And we can't use a one size fits all approach to the way that we present content. And that's really what UDL talks about. It's universal design for learning. But the challenge with something like that is to present information in multiple formats. Like, you know, if you want to have simplified reading levels, or if you want to have video or audio or any of those kinds of things that go along with it, it can be a real challenge, especially if you're a teacher with a full schedule otherwise, to prepare some of those materials. And really, you know, we learned in one of these chapters for this time around, just more about how you can use AI to generative AI to support some of those UDL goals and incorporate things into that framework.
So really taking hopefully some of the load of all that differential instruction off of the teacher's back to some degree. I'm guessing just like everything else with AI, it may generate it for you, and then you have the ability to obviously customize it and tweak it the way you need to.
Yeah, the way that I always have been promoting this with my teachers and with people that I work with is this is the 80% solution. So, you know, like a lot of that work kind of goes into getting things started and just like generating your first draft, right? And then once you've gone through that process, really taking that output then and refining it and customizing it even more for your students, so that you get that effectiveness. Because right out of the box, it's not going to do everything that you want it to do. Even with the best prompt, you know, if you do all of the things that we talked about last time, and get that perfect prompt, you're still going to need to go through the results of the whole thing and make it apply to your students. But it is, again, one of those things that gets you 80% of the way there, or maybe 70%, or, you know, if you're Rachel Feld, maybe it's closer to, I don't know, Rachel, what's your percent accuracy on your prompt generation? Are you about 97 now?
You know, I'm kind of teetering around 94, 95, right?
Okay.
Between that A minus A range.
Okay. So what about you, Rachel, from the perspective of students on campus and graduate studies courses and things? Are you guys talking about AI in this capacity, using it for generating these kind of UDL requirements?
You know, we most definitely are. And we're also working on a push for universal design for learning. If you're not familiar with universal design for learning, it has a variety of guidelines and just a really great website at cast.org. They're the organization that kind of holds UDL. But they talk about three different ways that our students, that we want to think about learning. And that would be engagement, which is the why of learning, representation, which is the what of learning, and action and expression, which is the how of learning. And these are, you know, three different ways that we can give our students choice. We can provide different opportunities for scaffolding for our students. And I will also put in a quick plug if you're not familiar with UDL or you would like to know more. There is an MLC course that myself and Dr. Carrie Minty teach, technology and UDL. And we go through each one of these guidelines in pretty great detail and talk about all the tech tools. And one thing I'm working on is how we can use all the various AI tools in these guidelines, because Jason is absolutely right. AI is a great, great source for just making those either the readings that can be at different levels, or we can present information in different ways. It's even, you know, you can ask AI to write a lesson plan, and that can be your 80%. Or maybe, in my experience, maybe more like 50% for a lesson plan. But then you can take your knowledge of your students and what they're interested in and what their background experience is, and you can really infuse that lesson with those things so it better meets their needs. And you have more time to do that because the AI has maybe already generated the other parts of the lesson for you. And I think that can be extended to, you know, letters home to parents. I'm sure every teacher has at one point agonized over an email of how do I word this thing to this parent? And an AI prompt, you can type that in and, you know, ask it, okay, I'm telling this parent of a first grader that they're really struggling with their math facts, and I want to give them some ideas to help support them in learning their math facts. And what would potentially take me like an hour to figure out how to write, AI can just zip out just like that. And then I can do the tweaks, but it saves so much time.
No more blank slates.
This is awesome. Where's big picture question, I guess. Somebody, you know, I think many of our teachers are just beginning to dip their toes in the AI waters. Where's the low-hanging fruit for them? Is it on the lesson design side, the things that the teacher would use AI for, or putting AI tools in the hands of students so they experiment with it? Combination of both? Where is the tooling, and where would you suggest maybe somebody fresh onto the AI scene spending most of their time?
I think if we're talking low-hanging fruit, the teacher side of it is definitely the place to start, because as soon as you start using any sort of tool with students, you've got to worry about privacy and accounts and terms of service and all those kind of things. And luckily, if you're signing up for your own account, you can give over whatever information you want. You want to share your social security number? Go for it. Don't actually do that. Don't. That's a bad idea.
That's a bad
You're
plan.
Asking for that. Find a new tool. But I think those, the quick time saving type of things, I think are the, maybe the entrance to AI for teachers.
Yeah. And I would add on top of that, like, before you start using things with kids, especially when it comes to something like this, teachers really need to understand it themselves. We hear a lot, right, that, well, you know, the kids are so far ahead and they just know all of these things. But what we don't really realize is that, the internet's a playground, right? And nobody's on recess duty. So the kinds of things that kids are teaching themselves or that they're learning in a lot of ways are actually pretty, like, they're putting themselves at risk, right? Because they just don't know any better. So it's really important, I think, before any teacher, you know, whether, yes, privacy is definitely a consideration, but there are so many other things that teachers really need to understand about how this stuff works and what's all involved with it before you start using it with kids. So I would say like my recommendation would be 100% prerequisite would need to be the teacher needs to have enough of an understanding of what these tools do, how they operate, and what they can be used for before you even start having that conversation about using it with kids. And it doesn't have to be a journey of self-discovery, right? Take a look at it as a faculty, and let's take a look at this particular tool, like ChatGPT, and just have fun with it, right? You know, it doesn't even need to be educationally geared before you're trying these things out. Like one of the first things that I ever did with ChatGPT was, I gave it a fictional restaurant, and I said, write a restaurant review. And then so it did. And, you know, it just made up this stuff about it. And I said, OK, now pretend you're Wednesday Adams and write that same review. And it was hilarious. Right. So, you know, so stuff like that, I think, is really like where we need to start when it comes from an educational application perspective. So even if you're, you know, if you're not to the point where I want to try to build lesson plans with this, or I want to try to use it for work, like you just need to understand what it is and what it does and what its capabilities and what its limitations are before you go too far down that road.
Sorry, yeah, not perfect, Jason. Not too dissimilar than any kind of foray into any technology. Learn through play, you know, get comfortable with it, remove the, you know, I'm scared of this mentality, so that you have a better understanding of what it's good for and what it's not. And then it becomes more useful. I think any serious attempts at using any tool without getting comfortable with it are going to lead to frustration and ultimately an inadequate or substandard use of the original maybe intent of the tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking back to maybe a year and a half ago or so when teacher Michael Vlieger from Risen Savior in Mankato wrote to us, Martin. I don't know if you remember this, but I think he sent us a Wells Tech poem or something that he had AI write. And we were just, wow, that's super cool. We got a poem about Wells Tech. And yeah, what a fun way to get started. And he was kind of on that leading edge, figuring it out. You know, that's a perfect lead in to chapter 9 of the book, which is the other chapter we're discussing today. Thank you, Jason. Chapter 9 on tools, because I don't know, it feels like it's like half the book is about tools. There's one or two tools out there, or 100 or more or whatever. And I'm sure by the time we're looking at this book, it's been in publication maybe a year now, the tool list is quite a bit larger than what they've included in the book. So you could get lost in all the possible AI tools out there. So is it up to the tech guru of the district or the school to come in and teach your students these tools, or how should that work?
So I would say from a leadership perspective, you really need to try to, like, we need to start with what problem are we trying to solve, right? So, you know, is it we want to help time-strapped teachers work more efficiently? If that's the objective, then we need to focus on tools that are going to support us towards that. Is it we want, it's a part of our philosophy. It's important for us to have people who are literate in the kinds of technology and skills that they're going to need in order to be able to function in a, call it a post AI world, right? Or a generative AI economy, right? So, you know, like if that's our objective, then that's going to take us in a different path, right? But it's ultimately that's got to be up to like the people who are involved in that work that's going to be going on to really set that direction. You know, what are we trying to accomplish? And then based on that, we can guide some of our training and supports to lead us towards that goal. I always try to steer people towards, like, what are the permanent things that we can get with this? Like, let's forget about the tool for a minute. What are the skills and abilities that we want to foster that are going to help bring people along in their overall development? So a lot of our professional development that we've been doing here in Oshkosh really is just about how to write a good prompt, because that's a transferable skill. It doesn't matter if I'm using ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or, you know, Poe or like any of these other things that are out there. If I can write a good prompt, I can usually get the tools to kind of do the things that I need to do with it. So that really is where it, in my estimation, and what we've been going through, is really where you can get the most you get the most return on your investment of time, because we all know, like, that time is a limited resource as well. So we want to make sure that we're being efficient with those things that we're doing, but then also getting a return on our investment that helps save things or make things easier in the future.
There are a ton of tools. Oh, go ahead, Rachel.
I completely agree, Jason, because there are at this point so many AI tools, and the cream hasn't quite risen to the top yet, and we're not sure which ones are going to stay around. So you could spend hours and hours and hours learning how to use one specific tool, only to find out that company goes under and it's not there anymore. So yeah, like any other kind of tech tool or tech, website or app or whatever, it's really about how does this meet the needs of our students in our classroom, which is hard for me to remember sometimes because I really love just playing with the cool techie tools, which is why I kind of like my job, because I have a reason to play with them without, needing a lesson objective. But that's what it has to go back to when we're using them as teachers, is how is this making how is this helping my students meet the objective? And if you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, that's not worth it. And that's not a place for AI or for any other tech tool for that matter.
What struck me in this chapter specifically is, it's page after page after page of tools, AI tools. And he does a pretty good job at kind of categorizing them for their specialty, what they're for, what they're not for. And it strikes me as that's kind of the state we're in at this point. And that's why books like this are helpful in kind of focused on the classroom, focused on education, because with any AI tool, there's kind of two components. There's the science and the art side of it. The science side is you're training it on a specified set of, you know, LMs, of language models. What are you feeding it? So ChatGPT is fed the universe, right? And you have to really write very specific prompts to get at what you're after. Some of these other tools are more narrow. So it's not the universe that they're being fed. It's more specific to, you know, a topic or a use case or a need. And then the art comes into what they do with the tool itself. So the nuances of an educator asking a question versus, you know, a non-educator asking a question. So they're going to phrase things, going to have different needs. And that's where these tools become super helpful. Not only are they narrowing down the language models or the learning models or the stuff that goes into it, but they're also helping the prompt writer along the way as well. And I think that's why this chapter is super useful. It's not, here's how to use ChatGPT. It's, here's a specific question or use case or problem you're trying to solve, like you said, and then it gives you the tool. Now, who's to say how long that tool is going to stick around? That's a great question, like any other technology. But at least you have some place to start. And I think the good ones will survive, and the ones that aren't as good won't.
I think another place to start is with the tools that are embedded in tools we already use.
Right, right.
Which, something like Canva is where my head goes, because Canva's been around for a while. I personally use it all the time. I know a lot of other teachers do as well, and they have built in some AI tools. So that might be a good place to start dabbling with a tool you already know, and just kind of add just a little bit as opposed to jumping into an entirely new tool.
Very good. Don't want to wrap up the discussion without just a little touch on policy. In our early planning session, we talked some about policy being a very important component as you begin to look at tools. I think someone's already mentioned what kind of security around student accounts, whether it's COPPA compliant or whatever it may be. And there are definitely tools out there that are and aren't. And so policy, where do schools go to get a start with writing policies about AI?
So I work in a pretty large school district. So we have attorneys that draft our policies.
That's where you go, okay.
but the good news is all of those are public record, right? So if you wanna get a really good idea of where your community stands when it comes to these kinds of things, check your public schools policy book. They should be, they have to be publicly accessible. Like, it is the law that those are, and that's nationwide. Whether they're electronic or not is up for debate sometimes, depending on where you live. That's a really good place to start to just see, like, what does the legal wording kind of look like for that? We in our district, we adopted a policy that basically said, like, we think it's a good thing, and look at all of these other policies for the things that you shouldn't do with it, which is the way that it should honestly be written. You should always refer back to your acceptable use policy or your, like, you know, if you have a bullying policy or any of those kinds of things. Like, it really let policy interpret policy to make a sort of an application, right? But then based on that, what we're working on is publishing guidance. So I'm pretty sure I put this in the show notes, and you can put this also, Sally, this can go out to anybody. But we have this guidance out there just to let people know kind of, this is the way that we're thinking about, right? So if you want to use it with students, this is the way that things should look. If you want to use it for yourself as a teacher, these are all of the things that that you should pay attention to. And these documents, I think, are a really good start for anybody, really, if they're looking to develop a framework around how to incorporate these tools. This is definitely a place for people to look to be able to incorporate some of that stuff. So beg, borrow, steal, and sometimes you can even have AI generate some of these things. So like those, if you saw in the document, there are a couple of paragraphs that are in italics. I actually just copied the text of the guidance and said, give me an introductory paragraph about these things, and make it put a positive spin on it, all of that kind of stuff, and spit it out. And I was just like, okay, cool. Like, I didn't even have to change it. So so that was the 100% solution. So stuff like that, like, you definitely have some possibilities and some use cases there.
And of course, you've got an opportunity to put the Christian view on these policies too, how it applies to the life of a Christian too. So great opportunity to kind of review what you're all about and how these policies and use of AI applies to a Christian versus Joe, whoever. Yeah. So good. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, definitely check out the show notes. We'll have links to different things that relate to this discussion.
Tons of resources here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you haven't picked up the book, here's just another encouragement to, there's other books out there, but this does a nice job at starting with the basics. And I've really enjoyed each walkthrough from Prompt Craft all the way to now UDL and some of the tools. It's well laid out. It's a useful tool for teachers for sure. All right, Sally, should we move on to ministry resources?
We should. And in keeping with the discussion we were just wrapping up, Rachel presented on this topic, I think, in a in-service type setting for the schools associated with Minnesota Valley Lutheran. And she has graciously shared some of those presentation resources that she put together. So, Rachel, tell us about what you did to put together this page of AI tool repositories by type.
Sure. So I took all the tools that are in the book and found all the ones that I could. Even by the time I had gotten, and this was this past summer, there were already a couple that just weren't active anymore. But all the tools that are listed in the book that are still alive are listed on this website. And in addition to listing the tools, I also linked to their terms of use. And I tried to find if there were any like tutorials on YouTube or blog posts on some of my favorite ed tech blogs, link to those as well for some classroom ideas. So this was a labor of love, but I really like making Google sites. So it was also kind of fun.
Great job.
Great resource.
And pretty much a lot of what's in chapter 9 of the book is right here laid out for people to take advantage of.
Every resource from chapter 9 that was still an active website is in there.
That's so awesome, Rachel. Thank you.
And a link to terms of use, which is helpful.
Yeah, very good.
How you can use it, how you can't use it.
Awesome.
All right. I think it's the time of the show where we take a look at our picks of the week. One of my favorite picks of the week sessions is when we've got all four of us together because we're coming all from all over the place. And this week is no different.
And maybe
Rachel,
a little bit competitive, huh?
Yeah, maybe a little. Rachel, what do you got this week?
I've got from Common Sense Education, which is one of my favorite websites as far as using technology in education. They have, you might know them for their digital literacy or digital citizenship curriculum, which is pretty great, but they also have some AI literacy lessons. These are for grades 6 to 12, so we're not looking at it with our little ones, but sixth grade on up. And they're very short 15, 20 minute lessons about some of the different types of AI, AI bias, how AI gets its information. And honestly, as we were talking about, you know, educators needing to know about AI, I think this would be a really great place for educators to start as well. I could see going through some of these lessons as a faculty and just kind of discussing it together. And you've got some resources right there for you. Some of the ones that are most interesting to me would be AI chatbots and friendship. I think that's a really interesting perspective. I can see some lonely or depressed kids really getting attached. I don't know if addicted is the right word, but to a chatbot because you've got a friend right there for you. So I think that's a very interesting thing to take our students through. And then there's also a little bit, the last lesson is about facial recognition, which I'm sure most of our students are familiar with because their computers or their phones probably unlock with their faces. So that's another, just a good way to get our students thinking about how these technologies that we use all the time can impact their lives and what's the behind the scenes of these technologies. You know, they didn't just poof out of thin air. There has to be some science and stuff behind it.
Excellent recommendation, Rachel. Thank you for finding this. I might have to do these. Maybe we should make it a Wells Tech project or something. It's a good idea to get up to speed. So good thing. How about you, Jason?
Thanks.
Do you have a pick this week?
Yeah, I do. So my pick is Ludia, using a generative AI tool called Poe. So we are talking about UDL and how that kind of fits in with everything. So this is a chatbot that is particularly designed to support working within the UDL framework. So under the hood, it's going to have a whole bunch of other like generative AI kinds of tools along with it. But then when you, after you create an account and you log in, it does give you the ability within Ludia to give it a prompt and just talk through like, you know, what's your subject area? What kind of language profiles or strengths, interests? What are some things that are going to be relevant for your students? And what would be a good way for us to like plan a lesson or plan some units around that? So it does a really good job of kind of looking through all of the different things that are available, resources and ideas, and it has a really good understanding of what UDL is to be able to guide you through the process. So if you are into generative AI and looking for ways to UDLify some of the resources and materials that you're using, this is a great tool to be able to incorporate into your workflow. So Ludia, it's po.com/Ludia.
Very good. Perfect fit for
Poe
our discussion.
Stand for something? Jason, do you know?
Does Poe stand for something? I have no idea.
Yes.
Power over Ethernet. That's what I always go to.
Okay. I'm not thinking that's it, but yeah, we'll go with that. All right, Sally, what's up?
My turn. And mine,
you have an oldie but a goodie, it looks like.
Yeah, not AI related, but I did want to do a shout out to Fax Plus at fax.plus. I didn't know Plus was like a domain type thing, but apparently it is. Fax.plus is a way to send faxes. And sometimes you're in a bind and you need to send a fax. And for me, it goes back to my tale of woe of trying to get my driver's license back. So through health concerns and things, my driver's license was revoked. I couldn't drive when I was paralyzed. I have rehabbed to the point where I want to get it back, but I am dealing with lots of challenges getting the right people, the paperwork to prove I should. And technology came to my rescue because I needed to fax someone something. And I'm like, how on earth am I going to fax something besides going to somewhere with a fax machine, you know, a physical fax machine? I really didn't realize that you could do it with the internet, but you can at fax.plus. And apparently this one is really highly rated. I did a little searching and reading before I settled on one. There are several out there. But this one, I was able to sign up for a free account. And with a free account, they'll let you fax 10 pages max, like lifetime. But I only needed to fax 2 pages. And so I did it for free with Fax Plus. Yeah, they'll include a cover sheet or let you write something as a cover sheet. It's pretty simple to attach files. They give you, I guess, analytics or statistics on the fact that it actually sent to a place and how long it took and those kind of things. So you have, you know, a guarantee that your fax was received. And I guess it can do a whole lot more than that if you sign up for the premium account and pay for it. I think pricing starts at like $6.99 a month, I want to say. Yeah, if it's billed annually and you get 200 free pages a month. Well, not really free if you're paying $6.99, but 200 pages a month that you can fax, and you can receive faxes as well. I don't think I could receive faxes with the free fax option, but Fax.plus is my friend and helped me get my driving paperwork to the right place in the lovely Minnesota Department of Motor Vehicles. So wish me luck, guys, that Fax.plus did the job for me. I'm still waiting for them to review. So,
shocker that a government agency wants you to fax them something.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good. Glad you found it.
Yeah.
All right. My pick of the week is actually an oldie but goodie as well. Apple Calendar. At last count, I have 6 or 7 calendars that I'm trying to keep track of all at once. You know, I have a church calendar. There's a school calendar. There's my work calendar, personal calendar. I have a camping calendar, family calendar. And where is there a single source where I can see all of my commitments in one place but Apple Calendar? I've tried this with Google Calendar, and you can sync like Outlook calendars. It's not easy, and it's not real time, or not very real time. So that's where I started. And then I finally came to Apple Calendar, where you can kind of integrate or sync almost any kind of calendar. You can color code it. And lo and behold, all the other Apple stuff likes you to use other Apple stuff, like Apple Calendar, works with reminders and notes and all the other things, notifications, etc. And it's free. It comes with every device, every Apple device that you have, whether that's an iPhone, iPad, Mac. And it works. It's one of their better software offerings. I don't say that about all their offerings, but Apple Calendar does a nice job. It will, even to the point where you can schedule events or accept events or propose new times, etc., right within Apple Calendar. You don't have to visit the originating calendar, whether that's Google or Outlook or whatever. Apple Calendar lets you do all of that. So I'm pretty impressed. I've been using it probably about 6 months now, and it is the place that I always look in when I'm trying to schedule something, because I can't just look at my work calendar or my home calendar by itself, because it's dotted with all kinds of other stuff from other calendars. So I need that single source of truth. So it's helped me avoid double booking or getting too booked over the course of a single day or evening. So that is my pick of the week. And I put a link, or we'll put a link in the show notes, to a nice Apple Calendar Like a Pro video, 7 features you need to know. That they do a nice job at walking you through some of the key things that are going to be really helpful to your productivity. So that's my pick.
Good deal. I'm an Apple Calendar fan. I just think it was like kind of exciting. I remember the moment when I realized it could pull everything into one because I just hadn't had that experience before. So, I get excited by technology just a little. So,
all right, let's move along to our community news and feedback.
Sure. We had an email this week from our friend Chris Hunt. Many listeners probably know Chris personally. Mm-hmm. He works at BDJ Tech, and he wrote to let us know something new and exciting with the new line series of interactive flat panels. He says they recently came out with an interactive flat panel that does not have an operating system. Your computer is the panel's driver. The Newline C Series panel is a low-cost solution for schools that don't have a budget for a full-blown Newline Q Series interactive flat panel. It's perfect timing right now because apparently EANS government funding is drawing to an end. So it may be that you'd want to include this in your budgeting with the government funds. So we have a link we can include in the show notes with details about the Newline C. And you can certainly reach out to Chris. We'll include his contact information as well if you're interested in a quote from BDJ Tech.
This does make a lot of sense. I know that even a lot of folks with the Q Series Newline products don't actually use the built-in tools, you know, that are there. They're hooking up their HDMI just like they used to. So this is the kind of this is kind of right-sizing some of that too for them.
Yep. And we're finding there are a lot of manufacturers that are going this direction to save, because it's like $700-$800 less per device when you do something like that. And then the other part that's really nice too is that they're switching to a type C connection, which means you only have one cable that goes to the computer, and that provides touch and the display as well. So I'm glad to see this shift in the market and manufacturing, because it's going to be, I think, a good move for schools in general to have these as an option. So
and they got to be lighter too, I would think.
They don't really weigh very much, because the cards that go in there that are running that operating system, they run Android.
Not much.
So they're just it's
putting your phone in there. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. But it is still a significant cost savings.
It's the touch. It's the touch sensitivity that adds all that.
Correct.
Weight.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Very good. We got something else here, Gazelle.
Right. One more thing worth mentioning. This is something new that Northwestern Publishing House is kind of sponsoring along with Wisconsin Lutheran College. It's called Christian Authors Live, and they're having their first event on Thursday, April 25th at WLC. And it's actually based on Dr. Michael Berg's book called The Baptismal Life. So he's going to be doing just a 20-minute presentation about the book, and then there'll be some time for Q&A after that, along with a book signing and dessert reception, that kind of thing. So a new thing being developed, Christian Authors Live, and if you're able to attend, it sounds like a great event. I know I've heard Dr. Berg speak before, and he's really interesting to hear, so I think people would really enjoy this.
Smart guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like him too. All right. Well, Sally, Jason, Rachel, thank you for your participation today. I always enjoy this show. We're going to do this, I think, one more time, right, to finish off the book. Do I have my chapters right?
That's correct.
So we'll do that in the next month timeframe. So I'm looking forward to that. And we're going to meet again. I see a topic here, Sally. I don't remember that we firm this up, but if it's in writing, then we're going to do it. Future-proofing your tech. Maybe we did agree on this. I don't know. That sounds like a great topic to me. So
maybe it was even you that came up with that.
It might have been, and it probably was. You know, no doubt. I have no doubt of that. So we'll see how it goes. That's kind of how we work it here. If you guys haven't figured it out after 700 and some odd episodes. So.
We sleep a lot in between and forget. Right. But we talked about future-proofing your tech already in this show, because we talked how these AI tools may not stand the test of time. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about on a broader scope next time.
Yeah, yeah. Rachel, Jason, thank you for joining us. We always love you guys on the show. So hopefully you'll come back and join us again. And thanks to all of our listeners out there. This wouldn't be possible without you. So hopefully you'll join us again as well. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.